Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm great. All the Christmas music beforehand. I'm not sure if I'm ready for it yet, but it's starting to build already, and you're getting a bit of a buzz on about it yourself.
Absolutely, yeah. And I tell you what, that's a lovely little prize, isn't it?
Isn't it?
To Leopardstown Races for a couple of days over the Christmas. Fantastic. Great atmosphere up there.
Place is always hopping. Yeah, yourself and myself be up there at some stage, no doubt, enjoying a few festivities. But it's a great day out. Just what you need, usually. I like going up around the 27th, 28th when you need a little bit of an escape. Get out of the house for a while and you're full of turkey, get a bit of fresh air.
Bodies.
Yeah, you can't beat it. Yeah. I look forward to that. Hard luck during the week, unfortunate defeat, but tough competition. Yeah. And the Scottish Open is still going strong.
Yeah, and the guy who beat me, actually, Gary Wilson, he's still there.
He's
had some great results on the way. He beat Corin Wilson, he beat Ronnie O'Sullivan, and Hussein Vafai as well on his way to the semi-final. He's in, and he's in against Tepchaya O'Neill from Ireland, who knocked out Joe Trump 5-4 pulsating match yesterday, 5-4, which was fantastic as well. He's the fastest. Behind O'Sullivan, he's the second fastest on the tour. Like 15, 16 seconds average shot time. Neil Robertson's still in there from Australia, and he's playing Joe O'Connor. Another surprise in the top half of the draw. So, yeah, you would expect Neil Robertson to win it, but you never know. Like, these tournaments, they can throw up these home nations events. They can throw up surprise winners. So it's great to see some of the lads that you don't normally see up there at the business end of tournaments, and in with a chance before Christmas, it'd be a nice little pay packet for them, you know.
We're saying that a little bit of late, though. I've noticed there's a lot of new names kind of cropping up week on week. So
yeah, there is, and you know, it's great to see as you sort of, you know, you see new players coming through, and that's what you need in every sport, you know, fresh faces, new faces, and it's great to shake it up a little bit and to spread the money as well, is what was very important. You know that not all the top boys are winning all the money. That some of the other guys are getting a piece of the cake as well. You know, we're seeing that at the World Cup as well. There's been lots of surprises there too.
I was just going to get onto that with you. There's a picture on the front page of the Irish Times this morning of Luis Suarez in tears, trying to being consoled. After it's been an incredible World Cup for upsets and shocks, hasn't it?
Amazing. I mean, they did what they had to do, you know, in that last game, 2-0, and hope that Portugal, who have been flying, to beat South Korea. But how well have South Korea done there? You know, to score the two goals, got to go on the cold down to get through. It's just amazing. You know, Japan as well to get through, Morocco. I mean, I've really enjoyed this World Cup. There's a lot of sort of scepticism about this World Cup and would they really pull it off. But it's been one of the best, I think, you know, for shocks, surprises.
Well, for shocks, it's been incredible. I mean, as you said, you know, the results, I mean, Morocco getting there, but the Germany-Costa Rica game, even that one, well, Costa Rica went ahead in that match, and we were looking at Spain simultaneously on the other screen, kind of going, what are Spain at? How is this even possible, you know?
I know, it was incredible. You know, the same with Brazil against Cameroon yesterday, even though they went out Cameroon. You know, you've got Australia who have qualified. They're playing Argentina tonight, I think they're playing, so that's fun to watch. But yeah, it's been brilliant for the Minnows, you know, that you wouldn't expect these teams, of course, to qualify in the last 16. Senegal against, although Senegal are a decent side, they're playing England. That'll be a nice test for England now as well. But yeah, it's great to see these teams qualify, you know.
Absolutely, it really is. But I suppose...
Have you enjoyed it?
I've loved it. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it so far. I've been watching a lot of it with the kids. But as you said, the shock results are the ones that are making it the most enjoyable. Yeah. But all of a sudden, I have absolutely no idea. I mean, Brazil are still my favourites. They still look very classy. But then you see them getting beaten and you're kind of going, well, anybody on the day can lose. So I still have no idea who I think, you know, apart from that, anything can happen. And France are good. Portugal, I thought, were decent, but now don't think they're anywhere near it. Why are your thoughts? I definitely don't think England are good enough.
You know, that's the thing about those group games, and particularly when they've already qualified, the likes of Portugal and Brazil yesterday. It wasn't Brazil's first team. You know, you're the second team in there. But you think they would have, given the opportunity, that they would have been sort of, they would have put in a better performance than that. But yeah, it was a bit surprising. But for me, I think, I'd love to see, I mean, a dream World Cup final would be Argentina against Portugal. You know, Messi, Ronaldo, possibly their last two matches at a World Cup. That would be ideal. That would be the dream one. But Brazil look great. I think England have a great chance. France, you know, I don't know. I think England, you know, they have a really good chance. And whether they bottle it or not, that will be the big thing, you know. Yeah. And they could well do, because a lot of pressure on them.
Yeah, well,
I think they've got a really good squad. They've got some really good young players there. And even though Kane hasn't sort of scored any goals yet, he's still a great provider, he's still a great footballer. But yeah, I think they've got a lot of quality throughout the whole team.
It's funny, I heard Duff talking during the week, and he was giving out to himself, because before the World Cup, he said he'd been talking to his son about Japan and saying that Japan were his dark horses, and then he didn't, you know, go back himself on that when he was talking about them, and now they're there and they're through. And, you know, they've got Croatia, a team that they're very capable of beating from what we've seen so far, the teams that they've beaten. So can imagine Japan being the wonder team. It feels like there's going to be some sort of an outsider in that final. It has a feeling that this World Cup is going to throw up a massive upset and have a different final.
Absolutely. And I think when you have a team who's well organised, who's very, very fit, very fast on the counter, are able to cope with the heat and the humidity as well, which is a big thing. And Japan are certainly able to do that. I think you could be right. I think they could be a really, you know, that's an even game for me, against Croatia, a lot of experience. But Japan are so much fitter, and they press really well. I think they could be a good bet to beat them. All right, you know, there's no doubt about that. And I think that's why we've seen so many shocks. You know, the consideration of the humidity and the heat. And the fitness is very, very important, and particularly for a lot of the players who are in the Premiership, the Bundesliga, or even La Liga itself. That this World Cup has sort of come too soon after their leagues, they're sort of suffering a little bit, you know.
Okay, very good. All right, so we're going with Neil Robertson for the final to win the snooker in Scotland.
I think Neil Robertson will be in the final, but I'd love to see someone like Tep Choya from Thailand, or even Gary Wilson, Joe Connor, one of those to maybe cause an upset. It'd be nice for one of those. None of those have actually won a ranking tournament. So for one of those to get on the list of being a ranking winner, for what they've given to the game as well, and particularly Tep Choya, you know, he's a wonderfully talented player from Thailand, who struggled up and down the rankings, but great to watch, Reggie. If you get a chance to see him, cast your eye over him, because he's a wonderful, wonderful player to watch.
Time for football now. Delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Alan Cawley. PJ is staying in studio with me as well. Alan, what a week it's been. I mean, this World Cup, just when we thought it couldn't offer us any more, here we are at the final, the round of 16, and there's teams in there that we certainly didn't think would be there.
Yeah, it's incredible, really, Reggie. And where do we begin? As you said, it's the World Cup just keeps on giving in terms of results and surprises and drama. And after the game with Germany and Spain that night, I was working on the games yesterday, and I didn't think for one second we'd have anything like what we seen the previous night with Germany and Spain and Costa Rica. And then, obviously, it all repeated itself again yesterday with Uruguay and South Korea. It was just incredible, really. And I don't know where to start, Reggie. It feels like we've gone through a full tournament already, and we're only 2 weeks in.
Well, let's start. I'll make it easy for you. I'll throw a few at you. So I suppose, again, another team that were a bit of a surprise package. They've got Argentina. Obviously, that's a tough one for them. The way things are going, I just don't know anymore. But I'd like to think Argentina would be the favourites on that one. But Australia, the team that have been linked with being a force in Australia that are going to join the entire country together.
Yeah, it's phenomenal, really. And when you have that kind of unity and support and momentum with you, that's hard to stop, Reggie. It really is. You know, no matter how good technically you are, if you have that kind of spirit amongst the group, it can take you to some incredible places. And I think that's what we've seen in a lot of the games with the surprises already, is that obviously some of the lesser lights, as we would know, of course they don't have the players of the calibre of some of the big nations that they're beating, but what they do have is that determination and that spirit, and it's driving them forward. And I think as well, if you look across the board at the standard of coaching now and the exposure that people have to the amount of information in terms of coaching and obviously playing against opposition teams, it's very, very close now in terms of what it used to be. And there's no such thing as a minnow. The gap is certainly closing. Factor in, I suppose, the conditioning and the fitness levels of teams as well. Mm. And that can be also a leveler over superior technical ability if they don't match that. So I think that's probably what a little bit of what we're seeing at the moment. But you'd like to think now that we're in the knockout stages, the cream will rise to the top. But I wouldn't be so sure, Reggie, especially in these one-off knockout games.
Yeah.
And we've already seen Japan breaking records in terms of the least amount of possession. Possession doesn't really matter at the moment in terms of teams that can sit in and defend well and hit teams on the counter-attack if they have that pace in the team. So I think it sets it up brilliantly for the next 2 weeks. And obviously, as I said, you would hope the cream rises to the top, but I wouldn't be so sure, Reggie. It's just been a phenomenal tournament so far.
Well, I saw Damien Duff talking on RTE about the fact that he didn't listen to himself before the tournament. He'd been going on non-stop about Japan and what a great team they were. You look at the heat factor, you look at the speed of the game, they've been an incredible force. And you can leave aside all the VAR and everything else, it's there for both teams, it can work either way. Sometimes it breaks your way. They're there, they've got Croatia. I fancy them to beat Croatia, and who knows after that where that team could go to.
Well, that's exactly it. Who knows, Reggie? And it's all right us kind of going through our predictions and obviously our analysis, and you look up notes and all sorts of information and research. But when it comes down to that kind of on the day kind of stuff, and that's what we're into now in terms of the knockout football, you just never know. And you look at how much the tournament has opened up with the results as well. We were all kind of looking at the start and thinking the path through to the different countries and who'll meet who in the quarterfinals, semi-finals, all that's gone out the window now. And it wouldn't be a surprise at all to see a Japan in a semi-final or somebody like that. And I think it's great for the tournament as well. I think it's made for some great evening viewing and entertainment during the week, some great stories and the romance in us all, I suppose, wants to see that. But I do think the closer we get to the quarter-final, semi-final, I do think we'd see the likes of France, Brazil, Spain. And they've all delivered so far. I know Brazil got beat last night, but that was more or less a second team. But I think when we've looked at them in the opening two games, certainly France, England have done okay. I think Spain as well. I still think we'll get down to the nitty-gritty with two or three of those.
PJ Cunningham still in studio here with me. PJ, I know you're an avid all-round sports fan. You've been glued to this World Cup as well. What have you made of it?
I love it. Alan, just want to listen to you here every week. But want to talk about, if you don't mind, England. Will Gareth Southgate get out of his own way and pick the proper team tomorrow? Because it strikes me that if he had a small bit more adventure about him, there could be actually almost World Cup holders and European holders, that when Hardy meets Hardy, as they say, he's inclined to go back to the conservative, you know, to play an extra guy at the back and forego a little bit of creativity in midfield. What do you think will he do now tomorrow? I think they're up again against it tomorrow against Senegal myself. What do you think he'll do? Will he go back to having an extra defender, or will he take the risk and maybe go for broke?
Yeah, I think you would like to think, PJ, that he has learned from his mistake, because in the Euros, I think that was the criticism. When the game was there to be won against Italy, they completely sat back after getting that early goal. And I think that is the criticism. You're 100% right of Southgate, that he can't be conservative. And I do think he is too conservative at times. In the group stages, though, this year, he has shown that he's more kind of open to change. And I think that's probably because of the criticism and the scrutiny he's under to get some of those attacking players into the team, most notably Phil Foden, who's an absolute superstar, as we know, at club level. Mm. So I think he has kind of taken that on board. But it remains to be seen when he comes up against one of the big nations. And it looks like if they get through tomorrow, PJ, they'll probably play France in the quarterfinal. And I'm with you. I think he'll revert to type. And I think he'll go back to the five at the back, try and get another defensive player into the team and sacrifice one of the attacking players. But all their strength lies in their attack. And with the amount of talent and amazing young talent that they have, I think if he's more adventurous and goes for it, I agree. I think they could get right down to the semi-final, but it remains to be seen. I also think he's been too loyal to Harry Maguire.
Yeah.
I like that he's a loyal manager, but sometimes loyalty can come against you as well if it's blind loyalty. And I think that's what we're seeing as well with Maguire, because I know he's done okay in the group games, but that's against teams when they've been dominating possession for large spells. Again, when he comes up against the better teams, I think he's a liability, Maguire, at the back. So I would agree in the sense that you're 100% right about him being conservative. And to answer your question, I think he'll go back to that and revert to type PG when it gets to the latter, the knockout round.
Looking at the way that draw has laid out, Alan, particularly in the bottom half, France are my fancy. In that bottom half of getting all the way through, because you're looking at France, as you said, probably playing England in that next round should they both get through. But then the next round of that as well at that bottom half is Spain and Portugal. I mean, Spain, when I saw them playing first with the young side, I thought, here we go, this is going to be the team that light it up. And then they go and lose the last match and they looked a little bit floundered and lost. And Portugal, I was thinking, well, they're all kind of finished up and Ronaldo is coming towards the end, but then there are some young players coming through, and that's a team who've excited me as well. So there's two absolute cracking ones with England and France potentially playing next Saturday, and also Spain and Portugal. What way would you see that one going?
Yeah, I think England-France would be an absolute cracker, Reggie, and I'm a bit torn on that. I wasn't sure about France coming into the tournament and the couple of injuries that they had, particularly to Benzema, but I think they've been very good, very, very good in the games that we've seen. And of course, to have Mbappe, the superstar player at the moment, for me, he's the best player in the world. He's been electric in the group games so far. And as we've already touched on England, if they're a bit more adventurous, I think they can trouble any team. Spain, who were my fancy at the start, and I'm still not veering away from that, Reggie, but I do think they need to improve. But I think if you look at Spain and the game that they lost, it might be no harm that they lost it, Reggie, because the group has opened up and now it looks like they will face Portugal rather than the Brazil quarter-final. So that might help them as well, because I'm not convinced on Portugal either. Obviously, Ronaldo, it's all about him, the Ronaldo show.
Yeah.
And I think he hinders some of maybe the other players as well, like the Bernardo Silva, Bruno Fernandes. So it remains to be seen, but I think that half of the draw now. And that's my point about when we get down to these stages, I do think the cream will rise and we will see the top nations playing off at the quarterfinals, semi-finals, and we do have some mouth-watering ones.
Time to turn our attention to NFL now. Delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Stephen O'Brien. Morning, Stephen. How are you?
I'm good, Reg. I'm good.
Good. You're getting ready for Christmas. Santa Claus coming to your house, no doubt. And the NFL starting to really hot up and getting organised for the playoffs. But there's not a lot of talk going on off the pitch as much as anything else. I see there's a big hullabaloo over the Patriots quarterback, Mac Jones, caught throwing a bit of an expletive-ridden tantrum on the sidelines. Are we kind of getting away from the football a bit and all this sideline stuff taking over?
Yeah, it is. You know, too many cameras. But you know what, Reg? This is journalism, so I will repeat everything he said on the radio right now.
Go for it.
No, I won't. But look, he was given out on the sideline, and what's really funny about it is, right, you're not allowed to say these things, but what the camera does is, for these games, is in slow motion, Reg, it zooms in on Matt Jones' face, and you can literally mouth everything that he's mouthing. So you're like, oh, come on. Now, look, he came out after the game, as usual. They said to him, you know, you were swearing at someone on the sideline, you know, all big drama. Because the thing is, media now has become an awful lot of clickbait stuff, which is why this show is amazing, because, you know, we just talk about pure sport. So, look, this is not the first time. They're always catching people doing this. And I always look at, do you ever look at footballers, Reg, where they have their hand over their mouth,
yeah,
and you're like going, get over yourself, you know? And then you look at moments like this and go, oh, I'm glad you do that, because now we're not talking about what did Messi say to whoever. But look, Aaron Rodgers is famous for throwing shade on the sideline. Peyton Manning has famous expletive rants and stuff like that. Here's my question to you though, Reggie, right? Because you played at the highest level in your sport. You need to be an incredible athlete to get there. You know, your fiery personality, you're competitive. When game frustration takes over, Reg, on the rugby pitch, and I'm sure you've seen it where lads would go off on a tantrum or on a rant or give out to each other. How do you feel about it as an athlete? I mean, do you hold a grudge if someone gives you
if you don't hold
out on the pitch?
Yeah, if it costs your team and it costs penalties, you don't see too much of it in rugby, because the discipline is so strict. If you dared to talk to a ref, you'd be off the pitch. If you certainly you'd never lay a finger on or a push or any of that kind of stuff. But like it's the result of it is so detrimental to the team that players tend to control themselves, and I think it's down to the you know, you see it in football all the time, it's down to the powers that be getting stricter and harsher penalties dealt out. It stops it. So if it happened in rugby and it cost your team, well, that player would suffer badly for it from the rest of his team.
What about teammates giving out to each other, Reg? I'm sure that happens.
No, that's all right. That's okay if they're demanding high standards from each other. If there's, you know, mistakes being made, if someone's not, you know, pulling the line, well, I think that's okay to take action with each other and talk to each other, you know.
Just proves it though, doesn't it, that it's immediate. Like, if they go on, like what Mac Jones did is going to cause friction in the team, but coming from you, highest level. You
know, I mean, nobody likes to be criticised, Dave. That's the problem. That's the bottom line. But at the end of the day, I think everybody realises if they're serious about their sport, if you want to improve, you've got to take criticism. It's healthy sometimes. And when you take it away from the heat of battle and you go back and you usually examine it and you look at it and you say, yeah, well, you know what? I actually was right. Because the first reaction out of every human is to defend themselves or saying, no, it wasn't me. Da, 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 da. And then when you actually sit back and you look at it, you go, well, you know what? It actually was. So I think that's where it goes with that. Yeah. But there's plenty of other stuff happening anyway. I see wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr., and of course, famous for that one-handed catch. But he's recovering from that ACL, and there's lots of people clamouring for his signature.
Yeah, which is a bit weird, really, when you look at where we are with the season, because, you know, this sag has been going on a while, Reg. I mean, it's a couple of weeks now they're talking about it. There was even links of him coming to the Packers, but then that got torpedoed by their recent performance. The thing I would sort of question is that how effective is he really going to be? Because we see teams like the Giants. He had a meeting with the Giants. He's going to see the Bills. He's going to see the Cowboys on Monday. All of these teams, Reg, are in playoff contention, which on the face of it, you think, look, OBJ, you remember the one-handed catch. He was an elite receiver. And it all makes sense because you're thinking these teams are looking for that final piece that's going to push him over the edge. But when you look at it, Reg, he's turkey, coming off an ACL injury. It's late in the season. You know, the temperatures get pretty wild in the NFL, you know, as you get later on. So I don't know how a knee injury coupled with really cold temperatures is going to help a team. So when you look at this, you know, this is all in the interest of Odell Beckham Jr., which we all know is a superstar. He's going to look for a multi-year contract. But I would be very careful with him because what kind of impact is he actually going to make this late in the season? He needs to get in. He needs to learn the playbook. He needs to get rapport. And then if you look at his last stint with the Browns, with Baker Mayfield, I don't think this is going to happen because the teams that he's going for are all well bedded down at this stage. But for the Browns, Reg, Mayfield kept trying to force the ball to him because he was elite, and it didn't work out very well because he was throwing it into triple coverage. So, you know, this is kind of a bit of a storm in a teacup kind of stuff. And I would sort of say is that although it seems like the glamorous thing to be looking at right now, the headlines of like OBJ, where is he going to land? This is not for this year. I think this is for years going forward. But he's turkey and he's got a knee injury, so will he be that effective?
Yeah.
Lord only knows.
Who knows? Well, speaking of injuries, I find this one really interesting that you were telling us about, that players are coming out and they're really outspoken on this. They're trying to push the NFL to use real fields of grass instead of the artificial surface. And I'm really interested in this one because of the injuries, because it happens in rugby as well. And we're not talking about grass burns here. We're talking about, you know, when a player plants their foot on these artificial surfaces, there isn't as much room for the foot to turn, or there's no sliding. So if a tackle comes in, we're seeing a lot more knee, ankle, those types of injuries happening from them. So there's a strong push from the players themselves in the NFL to try and go back to the old-fashioned grass surface.
Yeah, they kind of got sick of it now, Reg, which is interesting to see, because players usually kind of put up and shut up to a large degree. You know, lately, with social issues, they're kind of more outspoken. When it comes to the NFL, they're very guarded because you can kind of get blackballed almost by speaking out. We've seen that happen all the time with the Players League. But you're dead right. Look, I mean, these artificial surfaces, the big issue, as you said, is non-contact injuries. This is the injury where, as you said, you plant your foot and all of a sudden you tore your ACL. And that's happened a lot. So the players have come out and they've done their own studies and all that. They're really read up about it. And what they're saying is that now what they might even come down with is because, look, they've been screaming at the NFL owners for ages. And it's bizarre, really, Reg, when you think about it, because these players are worth hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, like the wage cap a year is $200 million for the NFL. So why they wouldn't protect their players with a pitch. But still, the NFL have come out, and the NFL owners and all that, and they've said, oh, we've done a study and we've proven that the injuries on a grass surface versus an artificial surface, they're kind of the same anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But I mean, if you just look at the injuries around the league and the high-profile players who've got injured, when they're not even being tackled, they're just running. And it's bizarre to see. It's almost like they've been taken out by a sniper because they just drop to the ground and all of a sudden they're out for the season. But what they're saying is what the players are going to do is they're going to not sign for a team who has a field that's artificial, and that's how strongly they're going to take it. So you have a big... We just talked about OBJ. Yeah. Imagine him turning around and saying, I would go to your team if you had a grass surface and not one of these artificial ones. Because the thing is, and what I will say for the NFL, Reg, is that the conditions are extreme. You can see Green Bay, it gets to minus 10 degrees, you know, or beyond. They're called games the Snowball, for instance.
Yeah.
And then you have Arizona, which is really, really, really hot. So teams... Now, some of these teams still have grass surfaces, but for them, it's a couple of million quid a year to maintain that grass surface, because you can see it in the Aviva, they have the grow lamps and stuff out, whereas in these extreme temperatures you almost have to put a roof over your stadium, and that costs another couple of billion quid.
Yeah.
So that's the standoff. It's money. It's them. Do we have to change our stadium and our grass surface and maintain it, versus do we just play in what we have and then deal with the injuries as they come?
In a development just announced this morning and very important to mention, Lindsay Davey, five-time All-Ireland medalist with the Dublin Ladies Footballers, has confirmed her retirement after 18 years in the blue shirt. So what a servant she has been to Dublin football, and we wish you all the very best in retirement. Well-deserved at this stage, no doubt about it. Okay, Declan Drake is here now with the roundup of all of the local GAA.
First of all, this week, Reggie, we say congratulations to the junior hurlers of Commercials out in Rathcoole, who last Saturday qualified for the final of the Leinster Junior Championship with a 3-point last four defeat of Black and Whites of Kilkenny. 2-7-10 points was the outcome at the end of the hour. A particularly impressive victory when you consider that it was achieved on the banks of the Nore at Nolan Park. So well done to Commercials on that great success. On this first Saturday of December, heartiest congratulations to the under-21A footballers of Ballinteer St John's. They celebrated the 40th anniversary of the club with a stirring county final victory over Ballyboden St Enda's. They had 16 points to spare over the Fairhouse Road outfit, 216 to 6 points. No doubt the hope amongst the Ballinteer faithful now is that a lot of these players can push on into the senior ranks and be able to challenge the likes of Kilmacud Crokes, Ballyboden and Nafina for senior honours in years to come. Last Sunday was a disappointing end to the year for our junior and senior ladies club champions. Kilmacud Crokes lost the All-Ireland semi-final to a vastly experienced Dunamoyne, 111 to 7 points. And when they look back on it over the next few weeks, they will reflect on what was a wonderful year for their club. They won maiden, county and provincial club titles. Indeed, en route to winning the provincial title, they defeated the reigning champions as well. Not only that, but they won Division 1 of the league and the county for 2022. So no doubt they will be the team to watch again in 2023. Meanwhile, O'Dwyer's, our junior representatives, lost agonisingly to Saltill Knocknacarra by a solitary point, 1-7-1-6 in a day of all seasons, apparently out west. And they too, like the Stillorgan crew, when they reflect on the year that is about to come to an end, will appreciate just how successful it was winning Dublin and Leinster club titles. Be interesting to see how they can cope in the intermediate ranks next year. So to tomorrow and Kilmacud Crokes, an historic day for the Stillorgan men as they tackle both Leinster club finals at Croke Park. First up is a game which on Monday was switched to become the first one. That's the hurling decider. Crokes looking for their first title at this level, taking on defending champions Ballyhale Shamrocks from 2:30. Well, after last week's last four victory over St Mullins of Carlow, I spoke to joint manager of the Stillorgan outfit, Ciarán Dowling. We began by talking about the win over the Carlow champions and moved on eventually to discussing Brian Sheehy, the dual star, and the then dilemma that faced him.
We came prepared because we knew how good Morris would have them set up. We'd watched all their last matches. And I think on the day, we probably just got a run early and got a run at them. And that helped, just brought the energy levels to it. But it wasn't a match where we ever felt comfortable on the sideline. It just didn't feel comfortable. They were always within striking distance of us and we just couldn't get away. I think if you saw the first 10-15 minutes, it took our lads a little bit of time just to get used to it, because you could see four or five of them were slipping and we were unsure as to what studs you'd wear. We were asking the footballers after last weekend, and Brian Sheehy in particular gave us good advice on that, but we still saw lads slipping. Surface is in great shape and
Kieran, you talk about the importance of leaders, and we've spoken about Oisín O'Rourke in the past particularly. He did it again today with Ronan Hayes and others as well. It's particularly pleasing to see other people stepping up to the plate in that respect.
No, we're very happy because you need everybody step up different. You don't know what's going to happen. I've seen it here over the years before where lads, won't say panic, but they freeze a little bit in Croke Park, first day out especially. So we had a lot of lads whose only other time here was coming to Munster Gold Finals, and to come out here and actually just be switched on, be ready to go, is a credit to them and a thrill for them. So we are.
Brian Sheehy has a very historic afternoon ahead of him. Right. Next Sunday, football is first, which is probably suits you anyway.
Well, I don't know about that. It's unfortunate. In some ways, I'm here going, do we actually look for it to be moved, or do we just go and have a historic day for the club and have two in a Leinster final? I think it's very unfair on Brian, you know, at a human level, to have to go and sit. Is the football first, or is it? Okay, right. So he's going to have to go and do a warm-up, sit down, get cold, come on and play last 10-15 minutes as he normally does, hopefully, and then come warm up with us and go and play a match. Doesn't strike me as right. It's not Des Foley and back in the 60s and the Railway Cup lads. It's 2022, and I don't think that's fair to Brian personally.
Is it a conversation you're going to have with Robbie Brennan during the week?
No, I think it's a conversation for the club to have with the Leinster Council. I don't think that's fair personally, but that's up between the club and them. We'll just resolve it out with Robbie as we always do. All I want is Brian to be able to perform at his best. That's all. I don't think that's unfair. If it was Loch Inney, you have to tell, you know, some of the Tipperary teams, the Cork teams, we wouldn't even be having this conversation.
Thank you indeed there to Kieran Dowling for the post-match interview at Croke Park last Sunday. Well, of course, since the dynamic of the events has changed, because on Monday the Leinster Council announced a reversal of the fixtures. So the hurling final, as we said a little bit earlier in the piece, will now take place at 2:30. Crokes versus Ballyhale Shamrocks. Paul O'Dwyer will be the man in the middle for that. And then at 4:30, it will be the football clash between Crokes, the defending champions, and the Downs of Westmeath, who will be competing in their first final in almost 50 years. So we can imagine the level of excitement down around certain parts of Westmeath there. And I'm sure the excitement is quite palpable out in Stillorgan as well. Crokes, the football team, putting the Leinster title on the line for the third time this year, tomorrow afternoon. They've already had victories over Naas at Parnell Park, and most recently a disappointing Port Arlington at Croke Park. Not that that would bother them, because of course they are back where they want to be, which is in the Leinster final. We take this opportunity here in Dublin's Talking Sport of wishing Robbie Brennan and all the boys in the football team, as well as the entire hurling squad, every success there tomorrow. We look forward to bringing you the stories, hopefully, of an historic Leinster Championship double on the programme next weekend. That's it from GAA this week, Reg. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Declan, as always, for all of that roundup. Okay, now I promised you something a little bit different. I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by Bray-based author PJ Cunningham, journalist as well, of course, about his new book, Grassroots, the Second Half, Stories from the Heart of the GAA. PJ, you're very welcome into studio.
It's a pleasure to be here, Reggie. Thanks very much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. So tell me a little bit about this. This is the second in the series of these books. The first one was so popular you had to go again.
Yeah, more or less. Like, we got such a response to the first one last year that the GAA, I did this in collaboration with the GAA, and I said, look, we might as well keep these going, because it serves two purposes. One, Reggie, is the fact that they're quite entertaining, the stories. But the other thing that they do is that it actually makes sure, sorry about that, that was something coming in there. But it makes sure that these stories are there for posterity. Mm. Otherwise, you'd have a situation where, you know, people, I've heard most of the good stories in the GAA in pubs and clubs, going to matches in cars, the back seat of cars or on the way home. And you realise that the people who are telling them have grey hairs or they're not getting any younger. And when they pass on, the stories pass on with them unless they're put down. So what we did was, like, we've done maybe the guts of 400 stories now over the two editions. Mm. And it's been a labour of love, because it came at the time of COVID, from my point of view.
Yeah.
And I started doing the first one. And then the second one followed on, because we found we had so much that we'd have had it as thick as a Bible if we had to do it in one. So we've done two 400-page books. And you have a look at it there. I just think it's done in a format that's very easy to read.
Yeah.
They're all about two or three pages long. You can kind of, just before you go to bed, you can have a read of one. You can have a read of one between breaks and soccer matches, Gaelic match, whatever your rugby
so it's
matches,
like a series of short stories from people yeah. who've had experiences yeah,
the real
over the
experiences
years.
And they're not necessarily about the guys who win All-Stars or the yeah. guys they're yeah. about the grassroots lads who says, listen, jeez, I was going to that match and we got a puncture in the car and guess who came along and fixed it for me and that sort yeah, of stuff yeah, you know
yeah,
what I mean
yeah. And Ken has a story in the book, our own Ken Doherty.
Ken is very funny, you know. I know Ken through various times going back to years, but you know, he conquered the Crucible, of course, and mm-hmm. the whole world knows that in 1997. But he conquered Croke Park one day as well. But in a very funny way, he told me his story. He was just, by the way, he told me the story. And I said, look, that's a lovely little story. And basically, he was in a charity All-Stars team or playing another charity team. Mm. And as it happened now, I won't mention names here for obvious reasons, but Ken was doing very, very well. But he was being badgered by this well-known Dublin businessman. He wanted him to pass every ball that Ken got. And in the second half, Ken said, well, look, I'm going to keep going through and I'll use your man as a decoy this time. Mm. And he flew through and glory at glories, he kicked a wonderful point. But your man wasn't happy. He said, Ken, you should have passed the ball to me. And Ken said, put him after scoring a point. And he said, that's beside the point. We should still...
It's all about me.
It's all about me. But he also... A great time when he won the 1997 World Championship. That year, like you probably remember it, Reggie.
97, yeah.
Yeah, but Dublin and Meath was almost like an All-Ireland final.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
And this was the first round of the Leinster Championship. Mm. And Ken was hoping to put the blue ribbons and go out with at half time. But of course, he didn't know who was going to win it. So he had to put the green and gold and he had to put the blue. And as it happened, you might remember Paul Beelan penalty hit the crossbar in the last minute, which would have drawn the match, and yeah. actually Meade ended up winning. Another old pal of yours, actually, Ollie Campbell, has a great GAA story. Now, as you know, Ollie was arguably, well,
greatest
certainly one
half,
of the...
Yeah. Himself and Tony Ward having the battle.
Wardy and himself going back the years, and, you know, Ollie has been favourably compared to Jackie Kyle, and I presume he would into the modern day with Jonathan Sexton and all that. But Ollie made the point that he learned his trade, i.e. rugby, in the shadows of Croke Park because he went to school in Belvedere College. And he said that two things that was beautiful about the story Ollie told me. One was that the wheel came full circle for him in 2007. Ken, you were there yourself. Mm. When Ireland actually played England, when the GAA stopped being, if you like, inward and welcomed sport and welcomed even the old enemy to the sacred sod of Croke Park. And Ollie was in Croke Park that day. And for him, he became a fully-fledged GAA man. But the story I'm going to tell is typical Kerry and it's typical Dublin. Ollie was down in Kerry on his holidays, say late 70s, early 80s. And somebody said to him, you know, Kerry were going great at the time. That's the four in a row. And then they did a three in a row after that again. The great Mico era. But somebody said, you know, they're training up in Fitzgerald Stadium in Killarney this evening. So Ollie said to himself, you know, he had a pair of sunglasses. I'll buy a hat and I'll pull it down well over my head and I'll go up and have a look. And he went up and there was dozens there, maybe a couple of hundred there, as there was the case back at the time because Kerry was so popular.
Yeah.
But he watched the match. He watched the training session. As he said, my God, you know, here I was a Lion. Here I was an Irish international. And we wouldn't last 10 minutes with this Kerry outfit. And it, not only did it go on for half an hour, it went on for an hour and a half at blitzkrieg pace. So many years later, he's in Dublin at an award ceremony. It just happens, Mick O'Dwyer and Mikey Sheehy, who was the star of that team, Mikey knew Ollie through meeting him at various awards, and he called him over. And of course, they're hopping the balls to one another. And he said, don't suppose you ever saw us training, Ollie. And Ollie kind of said, well, I actually did. And Mikey says to him, and do you think that Mico didn't spot you? And Ollie said, what do you mean? And he said, Mico called us in to the centre of the GA pitch that day and he said, lads, he says, there's a rugby fancy Dan over there now watching us to see, are we culties or are we proper sportsmen? We're going to give him something that he can put in his pipe and smoke for the rest of the day. And Ollie said, he didn't realise that he had been tricked into watching the greatest GA session of all time.
Brilliant.
And Mico had it cop from the world.
He knew well what was going on. Oh, that'll be Mikko, all right, no question about that. It's funny that you say that, 2007, because I grew up, as a lot of our listeners know, in Croke Park, because I had an uncle that played for Galway, Peter Lee, and was part of that 81 National League winning team and the 83 finalists against the Dubs, the Dirty Dozen, as they were called, or the Mighty 12, everybody else called them, the 12 Apostles, because they went and beat Galway that day. But there was skin and hair flying, and of course the late great Brian Mullins playing in that as well, amongst some many other legends. But I always remember wondering back in those days if I'd ever get to go out and play in Croke Park, and I never did. And like the year I retired, the following year we played England in that famous victory. I retired in 2006, and the following year I was there in the stand watching that game, and I'll never forget going across the floods of people and all the jokes at the side about getting the visas to pass from the south side for the rugby people to the north side, but the floods of people going across to Croke Park. It was an incredible day, totally different experience, and to see Jones's Road flooded with rugby jerseys was an amazing thing. It really was, given all the history that was there throughout the years of GAA and the Old Enemy, and to see it opened up, and it crossed the divide.
In our lifetime, I'm a bit older than you, Reggie, but in my lifetime, from 1970-71, when the ban was finally dropped by the GAA stopped being inward looking and started then, instead of having vigilantes because you played a bit of Ga in Bray or Greystones and you played rugby, you'd be banned for 6 months. That's it. They had vigilantes going to rugby matches, you know, and there were stories told that, you know, Christy Ring, Mick Mackey, they were all such avid sports fans that they knew they were going to the matches. So what they used to do is put them on the vigilante committee so that they could go legitimately and watch the match,
watch the games,
and pretend that they were doing it.
Do the job.
But I noticed you mentioned there a few minutes ago, Lindsay Davey retiring. Now, that's a great name in Dublin GAA. And it's funny, a guy called Finbar Dolan wrote the most beautiful story. As I said to you, I don't normally write about All-Ireland winners, but Gerry Davey, who's still alive and hale and hearty and was at my book launch in Croke Park a month ago when it happened. But Gerry was an Irish town fella, and you mentioned also the ferry. There was an Irish town ferry for the 1963 All-Ireland, because he was a Clannagale lad. He was only 19. He got on the Dublin team. This is the great team of Des Foley was the captain, Lar Foley and the Fergusons, all those sort of guys. But they got the ferry. Instead of, you see, don't forget, there weren't too many bridges across the Liffey that time.
Right.
And instead of having to come into Dublin to go across O'Connell Bridge, they got the ferries across north side to go to Croke Park to support their own local 19-year-old fella, who beat Galway 1-9 to 10 points, and Gerry got the winning goal. Now, Gerry Davey, I'm just wondering, is he any relation?
Is there
to
a connection? I'm sure if you go back through the
family tree. It's a good Dublin GAA
name
anyway, for sure.
Yeah. Well, PJ, it's a fantastic looking book, I have to say. GAA Grassroots, Volume 2, the second half. Stories from the Heart of the GAA, compiled by PJ Cunningham. PJ, thank you for coming into studio here and talking to us about that. Meantime, I'm delighted to say I'm joined on the line now for rugby by Leinster, Ireland, British Lion, and good friend Shane Byrne. Good morning, Shane. How are you?
Morning, Reg.
Yeah, great to chat to you. I haven't spoken to you for a little while, but I suppose before we get into all things happening this weekend and next, I just want to get your thoughts on the November internationals. Pretty impressive performance all around, it has to be said, for Ireland. You must be feeling pretty good.
Yeah, the South African game obviously was the highlight, no doubt about that. Australia game, bit of a damn squib. That was one just for the record books. You look back and a win is a win is a win, as you say.
Yeah.
But every player that was asked to step up did. He used quite a lot of his squad, which is what we want to do coming into a World Cup year. And all in all, yeah, a very, very successful campaign.
Yeah, great. No doubt about it. It was great to see it. It really was. Last night we saw Munster. Now, Munster are a team that have been under a lot of fire and a lot of pressure. They had to go away to Edinburgh, but they had a pretty convincing result in the end, hammering Edinburgh, getting the bonus point along the way, and just taking care of business. A big relief for them, I suppose. At this stage, though, given that you know, they're so far down the table, it's just got to be more and more of that, and they've got to prove all the detractors wrong.
Yeah, I actually, my girls had a game last night, so I was watching that and scanned through the game this morning, and my God, like after 2 or 3 minutes, they'd given away a try, then another, an intercept try. Munster really started poorly, but their set piece started to give them a grip into the game, and they completely turned the game around. Hopefully this is signs that they are coming together, that they're starting to find form coming into Europe, as we know, is just around the corner up next week. And that, what they've won their first game away from home, they're 3 on the trot now. This is hopefully good signs for Munster, because we, you know, Irish rugby needs Munster strong, not having the season that they've had so far. So hopefully this is a real turnaround. It was like the second half, I think, was 24 points without reply. And Edinburgh were celebrating the unfortunate demise of Daddy Weir,
yeah,
our good pal. And it was, you know, they had motivation, but Munster just, once they got a grip of the game, they completely dominated it. And that's, I suppose, the Munster of old. So let's hope they've turned a corner, definitely.
Yeah. Like you say, we need them to be strong, so hopefully that will be the case. The one I'm really looking forward to later on this evening, of course, 7:35 in the RDS, Leinster taking on Ulster. Both of these teams have in decent form of late, and they've packed the squads, there's no question about it. Two solid teams going for each other. Ulster really want to come down here and try and, I suppose, show that they're not just also-rans, and they find it tough against Leinster, they always do, so this should be a cracker.
Yeah, there's a couple of things to that. Isn't it great to see, you know, particularly with Europe coming around, that the two sides are absolutely fully packed. It's great to see. If you'd say the 23, because the benches are absolutely outrageous for both teams. Like the Leinster bench, Sheehan, Porter, Furlong, Doris, you know, absolutely in the pack. The impact they're going to have is huge. And then for Ulster as well, you have Van Meulen, Stockdale, Doak, all of these guys, Carter, massive, massive experience. So this game should be a cracker right the way through. Now, you have to say, for the last decade or so, Leinster have had a bit of hoodoo over the other Irish provinces, but Ulster are the team that have probably broken that the most. I think it was this fixture last year when they came down to the RDS, they went away with the spoils. And they don't have the fear that the other teams do. So this should be an absolutely cracking game. And barring a couple of injuries, both teams absolutely fully loaded, which is great to see.
Yeah, what do you think? Obviously, all the favourites are Leinster by virtue of the fact that they're at home, and of course the fact that they're so strong at the moment. What's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think, like, obviously, if Leinster don't play at their best, Ulster have the firepower to get a grip of that game. But I think, as I just mentioned earlier on, the impact that the Leinster bench is particularly going to have, I don't think it's going to be an easy run for Leinster, but I think they will win in the end.
Okay, well then, you mentioned as well next week, that's the big one that everybody looks forward to every year. It's this time of year. It sort of signals the start of Christmas as well, the Champions Cup, Heineken Champions Cup. And I suppose we'll start with Leinster. They're away to Racing 92. A tough one to start with.
Isn't it? Racing are doing okay this year. Yeah, look, I think really for probably a lot of the provinces with a different story behind it, it's really going to depend on the Irish province and how they play. Hopefully Leinster will get through this game. We have a couple of injuries, that Sexton will be back, and that no one else picks up a knock, because, you know, with these games you just need to play your own game, not get heads up in what the opposition are doing. Leinster definitely have the firepower to get through this. Great to see Lowe coming back for to add to that. And yeah, I think it's going to be a good day for Leinster.
Okay, let's hope that's going to be the case. Then Munster, they've got Toulouse at home. This is the big test because of how much of a recovery they've made, because we know how strong Toulouse are, and they don't fear. They're one of the few French clubs that don't fear coming to Ireland to play matches. In particular, they know Thomond Park well.
They do. And there's been some absolutely great battles there. The pedigree, it goes without saying, but again, we're back to talking about Munster and is the results over the last few weeks and what happened, let's say, in the second two-thirds of the game last night, is that Munster turning a corner? Toulouse are going well in the French League. I don't think they're the behemoth that they used to be, but Munster are going to have to be very, very good and better than they've played so far this season. And I think that's the key, is that if they can step up again the progress they've made, they will be able to hold off that amazing Toulouse pack. The result could be there, but be under no illusions. It's a big, big challenge.
So they're underdogs in your mind in that one?
Well, with form so far this season, you have to say that.
Yeah. That's fair enough. That's a fair comment. Okay, Ulster are away to Sale. Sale, a bit of a mixed bag. Usually you don't really know what you're going to get from them in Europe, but Ulster always give it everything in this. Do you fancy them to get that away win?
Well, let's say that things don't go their way today, and but it's a good game. I think they'll be smarting a little bit from that, and I think they definitely have the firepower to take on Sale. As you say, Sale are one of these teams that if they get a grip of the game, they can be very good. They have some fantastic imports. They have some very, very good players. They can play a decent brand of rugby. But I think Ulster are on the up. I really do. And I think they have the capabilities of taking that game.
Okay, that's good. Okay, finally then, Connacht, they're at home to Newcastle, and I suppose they know this is the competition they aim for every year, and at home you have to feel that they're favourites to win this one.
Well, simply put, they have to. You know, this is the way Europe is. You can't lose your home games, and they know that more than anybody. And it's good to see the game this week. They have a lot of guys back. You could actually say the game today for them, they have a stronger team out than they did probably against Munster, with the likes of Boyle, Murray, Marmy and all these guys back into the team. And you'll see most of those guys starting next week. But simply put, regardless of the opposition, you have to win at home. So look, fingers crossed for that one, and call that a Connacht win.
Thanks for listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken and Reggie. Have a good weekend. Ha ha ha.